And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And look, I saw on our Twitter page today, Andy, congratulations on getting your vaccine.
Yep, I'm catching up to you, who is already vaccinated. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, first vaccination anyway, but I didn't quite understand why you needed so much body butter on your arms to get the jab.
Look, Nick, when you're an amateur podcast with bad production values that, you know, has huge reach amongst Richmond tragics between the age of 30 and 55, like, with great power comes great responsibility. And I just, you know, wanted to make the vaccine look glamorous.
Mm. By looking as swole as possible.
Anyway, it was quite a nice experience. But unfortunately, Muhammad, the nurse who injected me, we had a good chat, but at no stage did he pick up at all on the vibes of the please ask me about my football team and the game we played on Saturday night.
Just
for people who are not on Twitter, I was wearing a Richmond jersey while getting vaccinated because it's sleeveless, so I thought it'd be the perfect thing to wear.
No, good call. It's a shame you didn't get an Essendon supporter and the chance to talk about how plucky they were on Saturday night.
Yeah, Darcy Parrish, like, you know, could easily win, very, very easily be all Australian one day on a team that doesn't make the eight.
Yeah, they're definitely friskier than we're used to seeing through this now long and deeply satisfying run that we've had against them. It was they looked the most Richmond-like of any of the Essendon teams that we've seen in recent years. All the attempts to steal our DNA, they're starting to be more visible.
Yeah, look, I mean, you actually the one who first pointed this out to me, but it's definitely true. Look, the scoreline probably slightly flattered us. Couple of metric look. I don't think that comeback they had in the third, I sort of rewatched all those goals and the sequence of play, and I don't think it probably wasn't as bad as it looked. Like, there were a few things in that they had a few lucky moments in a row. Look, it just happens in a game of football. There was concentrated in a good run. And then when we came back, we didn't do anything amazing. We just started to, you know, we won a few clearances and we reasserted ourselves. But that's, so look, the comeback wasn't as desperate as it might have felt at the time. And I didn't think, even if we'd lost that game, our era isn't necessarily over. But, you know, to the point of maybe the game was a bit closer than it felt, we did lose the inside 50s by one. The expected shots by the more advanced metric, it was within a goal. We still won. There are a few other, if you sort of look at a few of the other key numbers, that it was pretty close. So, look, you know, no one's going away from that game saying that we deserve to. And, you know, like, I know Essendon supporters are complaining about the umpire, but they did get a goal from a 150-metre off-the-ball love tap.
Phantom love tap.
Yeah, so look, you know, I don't believe it was a fundamentally a one-goal game. But, yeah, they were close, you're right.
Rarely. Look, I thought the whole Dreamtime occasion was great. Stadium looked fantastic. The pre-game ceremony was really good. I always like it. Always like it when we line up and our players have their arms around each other and the other team are doing some version of the power stance. Like, I don't know. Just feels
good
like
memories. It really...
Yeah, oh, it brings back great memories. But it also... I just feel like it speaks to the connectedness of the team, and that high end fluency during the really important matters. I felt it's hard not to think that wasn't the difference between the two teams at times.
Yeah, look, and absolutely, and you know, also been able to get maximum value from some fairly end of list type players, like just looking at. Like someone like Marlon Mickett was obviously really feeling his football. You know, didn't have a great game, but was crucial in really big moments and was putting the physical pressure all day.
That was a career best game for him in AFL player ratings.
Marlon Mickett?
Yeah.
You sure? Because he was only mid-table. I think he might be season best. No. I'm sure that's not true, but let's not debate it now. We'll check it later and correct it by Twitter if I'm wrong. But just on the general look, the stadium did look great, and full credit to the people of Perth they turned out. I'm not going to dwell on the issue, but I think what the club really thinks about Western Australia is that they'd rather spend a weekend, that they'd rather spend 4 hours flying back to Sydney the night of the game than spend a moment more in Perth.
And four hours on a plane is not the recommended form of recovery from a bruising encounter.
Look, and you know, we don't like to get political, like I said last week, but I just think people should reflect on that next time they're thinking about holiday destinations, about how welcome the team was made to feel.
Definitely. I thought sending Marlon out as captain was another nice touch.
Yeah, I mean, like, how much do you love Marlon these days, Nick?
Oh, it's pretty great. And talk about him a bit more. How much of a mentor he is to the younger players as well. I mean, they had a thing of him visiting a remand centre and talking to the young people there. Like, yeah, he's a big and genuine character in a way that goes well beyond the game, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. A story of redemption that's inspiring. Now, speaking of stories of redemption from not very much, a wrist injury from a minor kerfuffle that cost him 2 weeks. BOG, 10 possessions in the third when it was most tricky. I know some people are talking that if it had been a Richmond player, it should be Dusty. To me, there's no case. It's Bolton. He was the best BOG for us. And if not him, Graham.
Both coaches had Martin as the best.
I saw that. Why do you think that was? Because of those two beautiful goals?
Don't know. Like, his disposal was a little choppy compared to usual, but yeah, he seemed in control of the game more than almost anyone else, I think. But yeah,
it's hard to, like, the advanced metrics didn't have actually had Graham as our best player. The slightly less advanced champion data had him as our fourth best player. He had 6 score involvements, he had 3 goals, 5 clearances. But, like, there's nothing I can... I can't actually make the case for him being hand on heart. I would have Bolt Graham's game, which was, aside from 2, like, brilliant Jack Graham, that is, style goals, he had 80 pressure acts, Nick.
I know, and he covered a ton of... ground as well. He comes up really high in the aggregate running stats. It's a ground that suits his style of super hard running as well. And yeah, I'm very pleased that with the Eagles on the horizon and another game on that ground, that we've got Kane Lambert on the horizon as well. I think. Just those guys with a super big work rate are really well suited to playing there.
We may struggle to get Lambert to play because he's not in Melbourne, so he's in inverted commas dirty. He might not be fully fit.
Dimmer today said he'd play.
We'll see. While we're sort of doling out the laurels of victory, Jason, because we mentioned George last week as the mysterious George of it, that no one knows quite who why George is playing except Dimmer, George's immediate family and his fanboys. He went and kicked 3 goals and had 18 possessions this week. It was a
career high in marks. Yeah.
Look, I'm not saying he turned around and gave the middle finger to Richmond Tiger Talk after one of those goals, but he would have been in his rights to do it.
Oh, no. Look, we've we've learned. Like, after we wasted the whole of the 2017 final series questioning his place in the team, like, we mostly know better. Like, we reflect on...
We talk about it. It's tongue-in-cheek.
Well, we do talk about when he's going through a bit of a dry spot, but, you know, you've got to get him out of the team with dynamite.
Yeah. Well, the substance on Earth that has been found that that is stronger than George's hold on his spot in the team is yet to be found. Kryptonite or something like that. Now, Nick, while we're going through the small forwards, Richmond Tiger Talk favourite Jake Arts. So when you're playing one less small forward, the ones that are there becomes more even more important. And, you know, he only had one touch in the first quarter, but finished with 18, 7 score involvements. He's become, like, he's the most reliable of our forwards. He's always there, and he started to do really clever, creative things. He's a rock. He's so dependable.
I know, and we didn't see it coming. And I think, you know, we've talked on and on about this Richmond team is a story of putting round pegs in round holes and helping players to be the best versions of themselves. And yeah, he spent years in the VFL, and I don't think anyone would have seen this level of performance. Like, he's not an elite athlete at a position where they're often elite athletes. He's not a freak kick for goal.
I mean, you put it out. He was hardly even, like, one of the seasons for on our list in the VFL. He played a lot of games and was hardly ever in the best.
Yeah, he never kicked a ton of goals. He always tackled well, but not overwhelmingly so. Like, yeah, it's a great story.
Yeah, it's one. There was a moment where actually we ran a clear out for him. We cleared out the forward line and sort of basically ran an ISO for him to get the forward pass. Sadly, it was punched away. But yeah, his status in the team is clearly right up.
Definitely so. Speaking of status in the team, he's played some good games before, but was that the best game Marbia Choles ever played?
Hmm. Well, you know, Nick, this is obviously something I've been keen to. But like, all of this has been foreplay to what I really wanted to discuss, which was the Rucks. So,
yeah.
Okay. So there needs to be some, and we'll talk about this even more when we preview the West Coast game. The Marbs experience, the him putting in hard contested work, you know, it was there. I can say this now because he's a lot better. He is responsible for some of the softest ruck contests I've ever seen when he was young, which turned me off him for his first couple of years. Not at an AFL level, obviously. You know, you could see worse stuff from NAM to ground every week, but no one notices that because there's no TV camera. Look, Phillips is basically your definition of a replacement level ruck, and we did lose the tap outs, but only just, and we only just lost the hit outs to advantage. But Marbs does all those other things around the ground. He had 19 touches, plenty of influence. And what I really liked about him was he wasn't getting flogged in the ruck when he was getting tired. And, you know, round the ground when the Phillips could really muscle him, he might get beaten, but he never got thrashed. Like, he always made it a contest, and that's all he needs to do sometimes, because he'll get enough round the ground that he'll sort of win the matchup in other ways. I reckon you could actually, like, he is 10 kilos less at minimum than most rucks. And there was a ruck contest with about 15:40 left in the third quarter where you could see he got tired. He jumped to the same height of Phillips because he was starting to get tired, wasn't jumping as high, and they crashed him knee on knee, and the body weight won out, and Phillips started to tire, and you could see Marbs wasn't quite as good from then. But he still wasn't. He never put the white flag up. He kept trying. So, like, I thought it was incredibly brave performance, and he's only. WTF, what Marbs, what were you doing moment was when he lost Phillips when Zacharakis stepped Bolton. Do you remember that moment, Nick? Bolton was on the mark and Zacharias was screaming to the forward line, and Chol didn't adjust. He didn't drop further back, and he let Phillips get out over the back of him. But look, I mean, it wasn't the best moment of awareness, but it's also not a hang him in town square type moment. No. So
and
look,
and to answer, we haven't talked about his first 10 minutes of the game when he just marked every single Essendon kick, it seems.
Oh, yeah.
He finished up with a game high nine intercepts. Like, it's a pretty impressive effort.
Yeah, I should have said, like, I mean, I tweeted on that, so I sort of moved on from it. But in the first 7 minutes of the game, Chol had 6 disposals, 3 intercepts, and a goal assist. And like that was his first spell. You're right. Like he had wonderful moments, but like to go back to, you know, he's always played a peripheral role before in a sort of role where he's came in and done these little cameos. Well, he got given an alpha role, one of the key roles in the team, and he held up. So to answer your question in an incredibly long-winded way, I agree. That was the best game. Mm. He might have done individually better games statistically. I don't know if that was career best on the AFL ratings, but to me that was his – he had the most important role and he performed it well. So, yes, it was his best game.
Yeah, definitely. And it won't take it'll continue the sort of the off-season chatter about him. So because we've delisted him before and then re-rookied him, he's automatically a free agent when he's out of contract. So it's quite easy for opposition clubs to recruit him. And we've seen him with, you know, clubs like the Gold Coast and you know, St Kilda have practically run out of tall players in this season. Like, clubs always need functional depth.
I think, and we'll come back next. This week will be the really, really telling moment for Marbs because Marbs has the crack at knick-knack, but we'll talk about more in a preview. Shall we talk about CCJ as well?
We should. I thought he found Phillips to be difficult because he was giving up some weight, but I did enjoy the way he monstered Cox every time he lined up in the ruck.
Cox. I mean, Cox is getting a lot of love for his the fact he's 200 centimeters and can tie shoelaces, but actually, Cox had a ruck contest against Marbs where they both jumped highly, and it reminded me exactly about how Marbs used to be 3 years ago because Cox just completely jumped around Marbs. He jumped beautifully in the air and completely was avoiding the ball. So it looked good on the TV, but he'd taken a line where he wasn't going to touch Marbs at all. Cox's ruck work was not impressive. But CCJ, like... Sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say. So I thought... CCJ battled. He didn't, I don't think he won his matchup, but he didn't lose his matchup, and that was what we needed from him. I think he was hardly outmarked all day. He kept resenting. He followed up the ball. It was a very workmanlike effort, and with the two goals, yeah, he certainly earned his keep.
Yeah, and the key word, the wasn't outmarked, I think, is the key phrase there. Mm. Like I found multiple goals. Jack goal just before quarter time was because CCJ drew a 2-on-1. Bolton kicked a goal because CCJ brought a ball to ground that was 2-on-1. He did it multiple times, and that's what Tom Lynch is great at. And actually, his stat line was pretty similar to a Tom Lynch game. Now, he wasn't playing against the best opponent, but look, that's what he needs to do to...
Yeah, and he was playing against a big, very mature body in James Stewart. So, yeah, and that he was still getting to the front despite playing against a guy who's bigger, you know, stronger than he is. So, that was encouraging.
Yeah, look, and that's what he needs to do. He just needs to... He doesn't need to be Jack. He just needs to provide that contest for the long outlet ball, and I thought he did that really good, really well. So look, I thought it was very promising after, like, repeating last week was going to be a stretch, but I was very happy with this game. I'm much more reassured that he's standing up at an AFL level.
Mm. The look, we've talked about him frequently before. Just thought it was another really assured performance from Noah Bolter, topped off by a just lovely goal when the rout was on in the fourth quarter. But he's tracking really well. The one thing that he's still having issues with is tracking back with his man. Like, there was a bad one, I think, in the third quarter where Hooker got out the back of him. So it's still just having that game sense of where his man, being able to track the ball and his man at the same time. But yeah, he's going really well.
Agreed. I really hope Prestia, whatever's wrong, isn't out for too long, because he had 26 disposal and it was very important to have him back.
Yeah, and he just makes such a difference to our clearance work. Yeah, we'll definitely miss him. I was saying, you know, it's hamstring tightness, so hopefully not a serious injury, but it just, you know, you've got to give him at least this week and the bye. But yeah, so it's definitely a concern.
He's the straw that stirs the drink a lot, very often.
Yeah. You know, hopefully Lambert's able to come in for him, because then it's a fairly easy swap. Because I did think Riley Colley-Dawkins playing a lot at half forward wasn't really his best role. He was better in the last quarter when he spent some time at centre bounces. But yeah, he's an inside midfielder. He needs to play at inside mid for a fair proportion of the time to be really useful.
Yeah, two things. I agree. I think he lost his spot a bit with the inclusions. So he's one of those players. And I think Jack Ross is in the same. This is not my observation, sadly, but Jack Ross and RCD is sort of, and look, Christian Cotcheron are in this. A lot of midfielders are in this boat, is that they are just midfielders. That's their position. And in modern AFL, that their game doesn't look really translation. You know, not everyone can be Dusty and play in the midfield and forward line.
No, or even Shane Edwards, who seemingly can play anywhere and be fantastic.
I will say about Shedder, I thought he was a bit rusty first up. And, you know, you could sort of see that his game didn't rate as highly. Normally, Shedder, even in a quiet Shedder game, he rates really well in the advanced metrics because he's done something really amazing with it. But he missed a few targets on the weekend, which I'm just putting down to rustiness because he hadn't played football in a long time. So that it's actually an optimistic point that we can expect more from Shedder next time up.
Yeah, it was great to have him back, and the team was better for having him in. I think Nick Vlosten and Dylan Grimes have had interrupted seasons and probably haven't been playing at their best. Although Grimes's season's very much in line with his normal career standards. The only real difference compared to 2019, when he was all Australian, was he's not contested marking as much. But yeah, he's still going well, and I thought Vlossy improved over the course of the game and showed signs of getting back to his best form.
Yeah, he's still going. He's closing, but not there. So you've sent me two things that while we've been talking that, and I've checked the original game record that say Mark sets a clear career best rating for Marlon Pickett on AFL ratings, but I refuse to believe it, because I swear his grand final because his grand final every kick he had lots of long kicks into the forward line that turned into goals. Anyway, it's not a very exciting podcasting. Now, Nick, I did want to cast a bit of shade on Essendon.
Bring it on.
As it want, and two points I wanted to bring up. The first one, I would just make a comment, and the second one, I wanted to ask you a question. And the first one, I'd just like to record when Jack Stringer went to the crowd with the arms open after he kicked the goal, like he cured cancer. That was still four goals down. So
Yeah.
You know, like that is not an appropriate celebration when not only are you trailing, you're trailing by a reasonable amount, but, and you know, it was great the way he included his teammates in the celebration as well.
Eventually.
Yeah. Anyway, the second was, Nick, if we were redoing the 2016 draft, and the reason we say this is because I bring this up is because when after Angus McKenzie, by the way, and this is no criticism of him, but just, you know, observation, he looks like the bully from an 80s movie, like an 80s high school movie.
Are we talking about Ash McGrath?
Ash McGrath, sorry. Yeah. After he does his, Angus McKenzie is someone I work with, Ash McGrath, after he does his hamstring, he was described by one media outlet as the Doms are crippled by the loss of their superstar, Ash McGrath. Now,
so if you look at the top five players by AFL player ratings out of his draft class, he's not there. Like,
nope.
He averages a goal every 6 weeks. You know, his disposable effectiveness is fine, but...
he gets a bit of it. He's at 23, 24 touches a game.
He accumulates without... He's not a clearance monster. He's not an inside 50 monster. He's fine. His disposal efficiency is fine. He's a extremely solid midfielder. But like the comparison with Shea Bolton, it's pretty unflattering for him, for a guy picked 28 spots ahead. And yeah, there's certainly no doubt who's going to make more money on the next contract.
Yeah, so the comparison with Shea is not flattering. The comparison with Hugh McLuggage is not flattering. The comparison with Tim Taranto is not, or Jai Simkin. Essendon will probably like to have Sean Darcy as well. He's not a complete spud, and he'll probably be a 10-year player.
He's a good player.
But under no circumstances he is a superstar, and in no circumstances is, like, losing him hurts, but it is not a... is not a transformational loss in a game.
Yep. No, yeah. I did. Yeah.
By the way, Nick, just remind the listeners who our second pick in that draft was.
Well, Jack Graham, that is.
Yes, indeed. Jack Graham is probably a marginally inferior player. You would trade them, if you were us, you'd trade them for the head up, but was taken 52 spots.
You'd think later. About it. You'd think long and hard about what a really high character guy Jack Graham is, how well he plays in big games, the work rate, the pressure.
Mm. He's sometimes listed as a future captain.
Yeah.
You'd probably do it, but still 42 spots later, so 52 spots later.
I reckon you could talk yourself out of it as well. I really liked the way the team got around Dan Rioli with his late goal. I thought that was a nice touch.
Yeah, great. All right, Nick, I've thrown a shot at Essendon. I've talked about the Rocks. I'm happy.
Look, I wanted to mention, so we previewed the mid-season draft last week, and we took somebody who we hadn't been linked to at all and hadn't even really been mentioned in pre-draft speculation that much, Matthew Parker, the ex St Kilda player who's went back to South Fremantle, has been playing really well in the Waffle, dominated against the West Coast Eagles reserves a couple of weeks ago. He's already Marlon Pickett's a mentor to him because they played at South Fremantle together. He's super quick, sort of 6'2", running half forward type. He's got quite the highlights package to him.
Yeah, I almost thought like the podcast was personally trolling us when they the first highlight they showed of him was him doing a set shot for goal.
oh no!
Anyway, we get off the point. Look, it's always less exciting when, like, mid-season draft, as you've pointed out to me off the break, is always low expectations. It's always less exciting when they played in the AFL because you can always fool yourself, kid yourself that someone's going to be much better having been in an AFL system for the first time, but you never know. Second chance might be good. Apparently, like, very, very fast, hard at it. Disposal in the past has been sloppy. Mm. I don't know what to think. But
loves crashing into dudes in the forward line. That'll play.
Yeah, it'll work for me. When I heard that, I went from I don't really like this. I'd rather get a development guy to he crashes into blokes. Well, I can live with that.
Yeah, look, Sam Durham from our VFL team got picked one pick ahead of us by Essendon, which was pretty annoying. It'd be interesting. One thing I will be interested, like, he loves a big goal celebration, and I'll be quite interested to see how that, you know, our team is very big on, you know, celebrate to your teammates. Like, they celebrate hard and they get around each other, but they celebrate to their teammates much more so than to the crowd. I'll be interested to see how. Well, hopefully, if you can play, you know, if we have VFL again, that he gets the chance.
Yeah, that is actually, I've been told that is a team rule. It's probably in one of Con's books. Since Pickett, Marlon's his mentor, I imagine he'll be pretty well versed in that kind of thing early on. I couldn't imagine a better person. Pretty much, if I was on the same football team as Marlon Pickett and he told me to sweep the floor, I'd sweep the damn floor.
Mm. Yeah, nine Indigenous players on the list. If you think we had periods around the start of the decade when we had barely any in the team other than Shane Edwards, we've come a long way.
Yep, and incredible diversity in the sort of the stereotypical brilliant midfield creators to the hard nut role players. There's no stereotype, no set, just solid contributors. And almost all of them, Nick, I think, have been. I mean, pretty much you find this in most premiership teams, I suppose, but almost all of them have been spectacular value for money, value for the price that they cost us to acquire them.
For where they were drafted, yeah. Matthew Parker's the tallest of them at 187 centimetres.
Yeah, nice one. West Coast.
West Coast. Well, you mentioned him before. Nick Natanui is a monster. Like, this is a big problem. For us, he's, you know, he's super athletic still, in his early 30s. He's 110 kilos. He's top five in the AFL in hitouts and stoppage clearances. He's a problem.
He is an amazing player. He is the second rated player in the AFL by the AFL rankings. And yet does, like, hardly ever takes a mark. He's almost like the epitome of me of a podcaster, is that he loses all interest around the immediate right contest.
he's not a big endurance athlete.
Well, funny you should say that. Like, basically, he's the same. I don't know if you've seen this, Nick, but comparison between Nick Nat and Marbs, they're essentially the same height, and he weighs 20 kilos more.
Yeah.
That's a big difference in professional sports when you all have to run. So, look, it's amazing he's still got that leap at 31. Like, it's still there. He's going to do Marbs. And so he had obviously, Essendon played West Coast the week before. Marbs just lost the ruck work, the tap outs to Phillips this week. The week before, Phillips got destroyed by Nick Nat in the hit outs.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not good.
it's going to be a big test for him. He's going to get beaten, but it's all about, look, it's almost his advantage, because as long as he doesn't give up, he'll be able to get him around the ground, because he gets normal rocks around the ground. And Nick Nat's, you know, the scouting report on Nick Nat, which is the most famous one, is that you've got to get him around the ground because you're not going to get him in the ruck. So he's got an opportunity, but God, it's a huge test.
Oh, yeah. And look, their backup rucks, normally Oscar Allen, who should be coming back into the team after a week out with concussion. And look, he's no joke as a key forward either. Like he's out of the 2017 draft class, picked just before Noah Bolter. Very, very similar rated players, like both really emerging young stars, very good contested marks. Oscar Allen's a problem up forward, and quite a competent backup ruck. And with Jack Darling, who, you know, always plays well. So I did a bit of research. Just, you know, you get sort of hunches about people, and I looked it up, and yep, McDonald, Tip and Woody does play worse against Richmond than he does against any other team. And I thought, oh, feels like Jack Darling always plays well against us. And yeah, Jack Darling averages 3 goals a game against us. He goes all right.
Yeah, and like, who's going to play against him this week, you reckon?
Look, if Bolter on Allen, I don't know if Asprey's going to be fit, and he's pretty mobile for Asprey. So then it's either Broad or Grimes. So yeah, it's a tricky matchup.
Yeah, it is. Well, it is for everyone, but clearly we have a systemic problem. Look, I'm really confident about the midfield. They have a lot out. So
they do. They've still got sort of, you know, Dom Sheed, Elliot Yeo, Andrew Gaff. Like, there's some.
Yeah,
they've some played names. a lot of football together.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I'm quite surprised that we are favourites in Western Australia.
I know. Yeah, by a goal. Liam Ryan, if you compare. Not to bang on too much about Tipper, but if you compare him to Liam Ryan, Tipper is a much better player statistically, but I'm much more frightened of Liam Ryan based on how he's played against us in the past.
Yes, I was very excited when he got, I mean, I had to say this, but he got hamstring cap cramp against Sydney, and I thought, oh, here we go. But no, sadly, he's fit. He's a very scary player. I was going to mention, actually, Nank might come back this week, and I just thought that's a terrible thing if he does.
Look, I've heard he's going really well, like much better than they expected, but yeah, not this week.
Week before a bye, he's going to get his ass kicked by Nick Nat anyway, and this is Chol's moment. Like, if Chol plays well in this game, even if he's not on our list next year, he's going to get paid. Like, you know,
he's got every incentive.
And he's earned this right through his play in the VFL, through his play this way. He deserves this shot.
It's a big game for Callum Coleman-Jones. They've, Tom Brass is one of the better intercept marks in the league, but because McGovern's out injured, they've got Harry Edwards, who's a 200-centimetre, 87-kilo key defender, and he played well on the weekend against Carlton, admittedly with Harry McKay out injured for most of the game, but he was good. But that's a matchup of two young, big, you know, similarly built young big men, and that'll be, you know, CCJ's at least got a Harvard, and you know, if he can shade him, that'll be really useful.
Yeah, just got to stop the intercepts, but stop the intercepts, kicked one or two, like he's Essendon.
Yeah, I know. West Coast are the best contested marking team in AFL, despite Nick Nat not taking taking a ton of them, but they're very strong at either end of the ground. But how you beat them, and we've had a pretty solid record against them. We don't play them very often, but we've won three of our last four. But we've been able to just get that run and fluency in our game. If they can just do kick mark, and they are a very kick mark kind of team, they'll be able to control the game. But yeah, it is interesting the way that we've much more tried to, feels like, player controlled tempo at times the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, like this is, I mean, we talked about it the week before, but like we've been changing up our game plan regularly. And this was part of the credit of last year's flag, is that it was noticeable gear shifts late in the year. Look, it's hard to know what we'll pull out, because the playing them in Perth does favour our current game plan a bit more. And, you know, playing the tours, we don't quite have the, don't have the team structure that we've had in the past to really run them off their feet. So, look, I suspect we'll roll out what we've been going with like the last 2 weeks, which is, as you say, a bit more chipping, a bit more ball control, but it's been working, and it works. It's the right game plan for the Optus Stadium.
It's the right game plan until it's not.
Exactly. And look, you know, we can afford to lose this game because we've won the last two. Now, Nick, just quickly, I wanted to throw something at you before we sign off. Just before we start recording, rumours about Tom Mitchell and us.
Tom Mitchell?
Yep.
Huh.
So just indulge me.
I think that tone kind of... Yeah, keep talking.
Okay, so just without doing proper research into it, I guess the fundamental point is the Hawthorn Tom Mitchell we see wouldn't be the Richmond Tom Mitchell we see.
No, that's true.
He'd have to play a different game plan. He'd probably have to relearn. He may be a Cochin replacement if Cochin decides to move on at the end of the year. But provided the price was right, both in salary and acquisition, and he just came to us as a golem, a ring chaser, a title chaser, I'm listening, because...
Yeah, that's true. Despite my... Like, if they wanted a super premium price for him, I wouldn't be interested. But, I could talk myself into it. Just as a complementary ball-winning role, I think if you base the whole midfield around him, it's a pretty stodgy midfield. But if he's around... dynamic players, yeah, he'd certainly be useful.
Well, until Dusty retires, the team's based around one person.
Bolton's now, he's clearly in the top 50 in the AFL.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And the team is more than just Dusty, but there'd be no mistaking, if Tom Mitchell came to Richmond, it would be as a role player, it would not be as the crown jewel.
Would you prefer Tom Mitchell or Adam Chera, who we've been linked to as well?
I don't know if Adam Chera is good.
He's good. He's not great, but he's good. You would describe him in quite similar terms to the somewhat tepid terms we talked about Ash McGrath, although the player ratings like Chera better.
Yeah, I mean, I watched a few Chera games now, and, you know, okay, this is very superficial. Tom Mitchell has, you don't know how he'd be in our midfield playing a role, but he is established and proven that he's absolutely elite at certain things at an AFL level. And that's not, he's got lots of knocks to his game, and we don't need to prosecute them here, and we'll give him a kicking when we play the Hawks. But there is something special and unique about his game.
Well, that was one I was certainly not expecting. I'm 28 as well, so you should get a few good years. All right, it is a big game this week. The crowd will be baying for blood. I think there's very little chance that we'll win the free kicks back to back this week. But yeah, it's it like. And as you say, we don't absolutely have to win it, but it's a great win if we do.
Yeah, look, I think we've seen this on a lot of sign-offs over the last 5 years, but like we're up to our boils on this, and it's a lot of fun, the ride.
Yeah. I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.
It starts with a vision. If we're not locked into that, might as well pack up and go home.
You're talking about three flags by 2020.
Fitzroy's played more finals than you guys.
And after 13 straight losses, the Tigers are no longer toothless. Their first win for 2010. Carmichael Hunt. Look at Jeffrey. He does. Carlton are on their way to Sydney.
West on to kick a goal from here. He does. What a start. Can he just slow? He's gone. No free kick, surely.
In the final home of the away game of the season, obliterating the Tigers by 113 points.
First preliminary final in 16 long years, and they have done it. They've won. The Tigers are into the prelim.
Go Tigers.